50 years ago last week, the United States opened a groundbreaking fair in the Soviet Union. The 1959 American National Exhibition in Moscow, venue of the Nixon-Khrushchev kitchen debate, marked an iconic episode of détente at the height of the Cold War. As RFRL's Gregory Pfeiffer reports, some of its organizers today say its precedent is important for U.S. President Barack Obama's efforts to improve relations with Moscow.
Vice President Nixon escorts Soviet Premier Khrushchev on a preview of the United States Fair at Skolniki Park in Moscow. It's the official opening of the American Exposition.
In a leafy park in what was then suburban Moscow 50 years ago, American engineers constructed a series of futuristic-looking pavilions, brimming with art and fashion displays, along with the latest in U.S. consumer goods. Despite July's scorching heat, more than 2 million people thronged the park to hear American guides describing washing machines, chrome-laden cars, Polaroid cameras, and a model single-family house. Jack Macy, the exhibition's chief designer, says the goal wasn't to astonish Soviets into believing capitalism was better than communism, but to tell them who we were.
Regrettably, as typically an American exhibition can be, we didn't have enough money. We weren't funded properly. We only got $3,600,000 to do our stint in Moscow, whereas a year earlier, the United States Pavilion in Brussels, which was a third of the size of Skolniki Park, got $14 million.
Nevertheless, the event was a resounding success. Visitors stood in line for hours to get into the exhibition, where many got their first taste of Pepsi Cola. Muscovite Tatiana Stepanova was 16 years old that summer.
It was very, very exciting and interesting. I think I was in every pavilion there, even in where the tractors were. I wanted to see everything.
You never concede anything.
This program is now being recorded on Ampex color tape, and it can be played back immediately, and you can't tell that it isn't a live program.
When U.S. Vice President Richard Nixon and Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev strolled through the exhibition on opening day, the two leaders surprised their aides by stopping in front of a model kitchen to debate their country's technological advances. They continued the argument in an RCA television studio, where Nixon suggested the United States was ahead in the development of the color videotape used to record their meeting.
This indicates the possibilities of increasing communication. And this increase in communication will teach us some things, and it will teach you some things too. Because after all, you don't know everything.
Khrushchev insisted the Soviets were ahead in most areas. Besides, he said, the Americans would probably use the video only for propaganda back home.
What I have to say is being translated only into your ear, but the American people will never hear it.
At the time, Americans believed Nixon won the debate. But many of those present thought the fact the exchange took place at all was far more important than who won. Earlier this month, some of the participants in the 1959 exhibition gathered in Moscow to share their recollections. Foreign policy scholar Edouard Ivanyan was a young Soviet culture ministry official in the 1950s. He says no one at the Nixon-Khrushchev debate realized that Ampex, the American company that manufactured the video equipment recording the exchange, was founded by a Russian emigre.
Ampex расшифровывался Александр Матвеевич.
Ampex stood for Alexander Matveyevich Ponyatov Excellence. Ponyatov invented those television cameras. If Nixon or Khrushchev had known that, the debate would have taken on an absolutely different tone. There's no doubt Khrushchev would have won.
Явно победил бы.
Ivanyan says the tit-for-tat nature of Cold War relations seriously hampered negotiations leading to the exhibition. State Department officials refused to allow the Red Army Choir to perform in New York during a parallel Soviet exhibition there, because they didn't want Soviet soldiers strolling on the city's streets. The Soviets responded by barring jazz musician Benny Goodman from appearing in Moscow. Ivanyan says he was naive at the time to have believed cultural contacts would change the nature of relations between the two Cold War enemies.
Nevertheless, the exchange of exhibitions played a great role. We began to treat each other with respect for the first time.
Cold War fears also stopped many American companies from having anything to do with an exhibition in the Soviet Union. When Coca-Cola turned down an offer to take part, Donald Kendall saw an opportunity. Still, the former head of Pepsi says most of his colleagues believed traveling to Moscow was a waste of money. So the night before the opening, he buttonholed Nixon for a favor.
I went up in the line and told Nixon, I said, I've got to get a Pepsi in Khrushchev's hands because I'm in a lot of trouble at home. He said, don't worry, I'll bring Khrushchev by.
When Nixon steered Khrushchev to the Pepsi stand the following day, Kendall handed him a cup of American-made Pepsi and another that had been made in Moscow. Kendall says Khrushchev gleefully declared the Moscow-made variety better.
And started handing out Pepsis to all the people there to try a good Pepsi. And our advertising was at the time, be sociable, have a Pepsi. And there were pictures all over the world of Khrushchev handing out Pepsis. And the headline was, Khrushchev learns to be sociable.
Kendall eventually landed a landmark contract to mass manufacture Pepsi in the Soviet Union. But the executive, who continued to play a prominent role in U.S.-Soviet relations, says the exhibition's effects came to nothing. He says detente ended abruptly after the Soviets shot down an American U-2 spy plane in 1961. A year later, the Cuban Missile Crisis brought both sides to the brink of nuclear war, and ties didn't begin improving until the 1970s. But others say the 1959 American Exhibition was extraordinary for having taken place at all. Exhibition designer Jack Macy says the event helped set the stage for a long, mutually understanding relationship.
Something happened which was important. We started talking to each other, so this was pretty great.
The exhibition's 50th anniversary conference in Moscow took place a day after U.S. President Barack Obama was in Russia to try to kickstart relations. With ties between Washington and Moscow at Cold War lows again, there was heavy nostalgia for the heady days of detente. U.S. Ambassador to Russia John Byerly says it was the personal contact between the young American guides and the millions of Soviets peppering them with questions in 1959 that provided the event's greatest influence.
Part of the new joint binational commission that the two presidents announced is a working group devoted to cultural and educational exchange, shows that we understand that this works.
But Byerly says cultural exchanges also showed the great extent of misunderstanding between societies. Back in 1959, one of the guides at the American Exhibition said it would have been enough just to set up a stack of empty soap boxes. Less than half a decade after Stalin's death, Soviets were desperate for any peek at Western life. 50 years on, grassroots anti-Americanism is as strong as, or stronger, than it ever was during the Cold War. And Muscovites, much harder to impress.